Welcome to Taking the High Road, a special show dedicated to the trucking industry, specifically at the confluence of recruiting, retention, and compliance. In the fourth year as the host of this show, I bring over two decades of industry experience, both on the carrier side as well as the vendor side. And each week I interview industry experts and thought leaders who bring their insight to the driver lifecycle as we discuss the industry's greatest challenges. I always appreciate your feedback, good or bad. Don't forget to leave a review and a rating on the show. I'd also like to thank and highlight the show's valuable sponsors. Their dedication and commitment to the industry and to the show is greatly appreciated. If you're interested in being a sponsor of the show or joining me for an interview, please email jeremy@takingthehighroad.com. This week, I'm excited to be joined by Kyle Kotke, General Manager of Minnesota-based Kotke Trucking. Thank you so much for joining me, Kyle.
Glad to be here.
Well, I'd love to hear about your background, how and when you got started in the family business. I'd love to hear the origin story of Kotke Trucking as we're closing in on a century, if I'm not mistaken. Perhaps you can talk about how you've grown over the years and how important culture and being a great place to work has played a role in your success. I'd also like to learn how you've adapted the past few years with the roller coaster that the industry's experienced. And then lastly, we'll answer a question from a listener during our deeper dive segment. Does all that work for you?
Let's do it.
All right. Well, as is the custom, I start every conversation with a book recommendation. Is there any books that you might share with the audience that you've read that's been impactful to you?
Oh, there's so many. I'm a reading nut. If I had to pick one, Lencioni hits a home run with The Five Dysfunctions of a Team. There's just no question about it. But I'm between Lencioni and John Maxwell. I think I've read darn near every book they've written.
Five Dysfunctions of a Team. Great Lencioni reference, by the way. And is that business fiction?
Business fiction. Yep.
Yeah. And I love that. I think you're not the first person that's brought up business fiction. And what I really, really love about that is it's not, sometimes when you read a book, it's sort of, you're reading a textbook and it's a theory. Whereas in business fiction, you're actually, I see this being played out. I understand. I can relate more. I really like that. It's if there's any fiction I like to read, which I'm primarily a nonfiction guy, I like business fiction.
I'm with that. And, Lencioni hits to a small-minded guy. He hits the kiss out of the park, if you know what I mean.
Yep. Yeah. Well, he's got, I don't know, if somewhere between 5 and 10 books, because I know I have at least 5 or 6 of them, I think.
I'm somewhere north of that. So, yes, they're all good.
Well, I really appreciate that excellent recommendation. For those of you in the audience who aren't familiar with Patrick Lencioni, by all means, I would encourage you to check it out. And so let's start with you, if you don't mind. I know you're a humble guy. You probably don't want to talk much about yourself, but I think people want to know, who is Kyle Kotke, and when and how did your path lead you to trucking?
Well, I'm a third generation operator of our family business. So born into the industry would actually be factual in my case. My grandfather started in 1938, and somewhere around age 10 or 11, I was issued a grease gun and told to go into the backyard and start greasing trailers. And my mother was kind enough to figure out how to make a really large out of service sign to hang on the front of the trailer to make sure that a driver didn't hook up to it and take off while I was greasing it. I'm also honest to say that it might be the only job in my life that I've been fired from. My brothers joke with me candidly that my input is always needed and less so on the maintenance side of everything we do here. So that is my beginning. I'm a proud father of 5 daughters. I'm a loving husband of a wife who tolerates this crazy lifestyle that we live. If my mother was still alive, she would joke that our family is the largest in Buffalo Lake, population 700, because here in my family, we've got 250 colleagues that we all call family.
Wow. And you mentioned, being there in Minnesota. You're an active member of the Minnesota Trucking Association, as is the company that I founded, Driver Reach. And yes. Great association, great network of like-minded people who really care about taking the industry to the next level. And it's encouraging, because when I talk to folks on the carrier side, generally, when I ask the question, you know, how they got into the industry, it's always one of two ways. Either they were born into it, like you just shared. In fact, you're the second, third generation carrier that I've talked to just in the last month or so, which is exciting. And it says a lot about the industry that we're in. But then, or people like me who sort of stumbled into it, and then you realized, whoa, look what I just got into. This is amazing. If you just give it a chance, you'll realize the people are the best part of it. But then the work that we do and the importance of the work that we do, I think, is a worthy cause. So that's cool. Thank you for sharing that. And I assume it's safe to say that it was probably inevitable that you were going to be working in the company at 10 or 11, giving you a grease gun.
You know, I had that brief moment where I wanted to be better than trucking. You know, I went to school. I have a degree in credit and finance. And I figured out that I was a blue collar guy, and the suit and tie was not exactly in my future. So now I own a suit. I barely ever wear it. I joke it's either a family or a driver's funeral or wedding that I take that thing out for. I had that very, very brief moment. And like every other family trucking company, I missed my family when I went down that path for 18 months of schooling and working away from the family. So I came running home because, frankly, if I was going to swing and miss, I wanted to do it with my family on my side.
Oh, I love that. That's a really good point. And I can see how it's probably, there's this temptation being at a pivotal point at your, when you're growing up and you decide, is this the path I take? Or, because that's there, it's there for me. And it's an easy path, easier, because it's sort of paved for you. Or do I do something over here? And some people do great over there. But I think your heart was there. And I think
my heart was here, and there's nothing to be said with, as I look at that fourth generation, and many of them are starting to reach that early adulthood. Many of them are away from our business with an open path that if they desire to come back, they can. There's nothing wrong with scratching your own path. And frankly, we have no intentions to close that door on any of those that are choosing that path. In fact, there's something to be said about getting up on your own rather than surrounding yourself immediately with those people to help you out too. So,
well, to your point, for the Kodke fourth generation that's listening, the door will remain open
always.
Now, Kodke's been around since, you said, 1938. That's amazing. Do you mind sharing that origin story and how the family business evolved over the decades?
Well, grandfather, Elmer, purchased one truck, got into milk hauling and fertilizer and all kinds of egg-based things. My dad and my uncle got involved in 1961. They quickly added general freight and U.S. mail to that. My dad and uncle broke the partnership up in 1970. My dad moved to a lot of grains, agricultural grains. And he had a fantastic 13-year run, which started to end then with deregulation in 1983. Every farmer became our competitor instead of our customer. So we had a slow start to get into refrigerated trucking, which is now our specialty. Did so. Then my brothers, I'm the youngest of three brothers, all active in the business. They had already been involved in 1996. My mom and dad decided to take an early retirement in a method to try to keep all three of us not only interested, but financially involved as well. So not all that indifferent of anybody that you've had on. We stayed small. We still remain small. And then bought out two companies, one in 2016, one in 2019, both Florida heavy or based. Frankly, we just saw the train coming down the tracks that we had to get either a little bigger or get out. We decided we weren't done playing in the sandbox yet. So we decided to roll our dice for another roll here. So some days that's a great decision. Some days not so much, but here we are. We're still swinging.
Well, we've been through a tough time for sure, and we'll touch on that in a minute. But I'd love to celebrate 100 years with you.
I'll be here.
That will be a fantastic moment and a really worthy time to celebrate. Now, what is it, could you say, about Cocky that's unique? This is for those in the audience who might not be as familiar. Can you share, you know, some of the core values, both personally and for Cocky Trucking, that that make you who you are?
Well, we are blue collar. As much as everybody wants to identify being blue collar, we are. I live in a Rambler home. I drive a 10-year-old vehicle. I think a toy is a 24-year-old snowmobile. And, you know, there's not much about us that isn't exactly who you see is what you get. That makes us very personable in who we are, and makes it very easy then to set our core values, of which, you know, family values number one in everything we do, whether it be my actual blood or yours. We're incredibly customer ridiculously focused and employee centric in everything we do. Those three things, if it don't involve them three things, I oftentimes whisk it off my desk and I don't deal with it at all.
It's people, right?
It's people.
This is a people business, whether those people are your family, your, you know, employees, which is an extension of your family, your customers, or just other, you know, people that are in this industry. These are your people. This is the industry, the business that we're in, and it's a people business. Blue collar, humble. Generally, that's what I think of with people that work hard. They're humble. They have, you know, sort of a strong North Star, you know, that they're focused on doing the right thing. And that's certainly the impression that I get. And I've seen the hashtag bleeding blue. Can you share, what does that mean? What does it mean to bleed blue?
It's the encompassing of those three values. So when we bought out many of the assets of Walba and Company, we inherited a bunch of value sets, and we wanted ours to be prevalent in those two families joining together. My nephew and I quickly thought about, how do we describe who we are, what we stand for, in a very, very short period of doing it. Blue Trucks led the bleeding blue, and might have had a new name, but frankly, it's just the exact same value set that we've had forever. So when people do things great here, we recognize them for bleeding blue, our value sets, and privately, we it's not all that uncommon to review an employee on a bleeding blue review, which is, frankly, you're not doing something the way that we think you should be doing it. So it is a catchy hashtag that many people catch on to. Frankly, it kind of felt a little corny to an old fashioned plowboy like myself at the beginning. But now, as drivers enter our office talking about bleeding blue, you know that you've done it right by making sure that it is who you are and that you continue to nurture that.
Well, it's got legs, and I think it's got legs, A, because that's what people are doing nowadays. You know, it kind of, to your point, we're probably fairly close to the same age, maybe. And it's one of those things, as I get older, I'm like, oh, what is this we're doing now? But at the same time, it's stuff that it's catching on, and it's more and more people are doing it and therefore embrace it. But it's encouraging to see that that folks on your team are, that's something that they're talking about. That means that it's sticky.
It's important to know that ours is a little different, and here's why. There's two kinds of marketing that you do. For the sake of your viewership and not to damage your self-ego, I could care less if you know about Bleeding Blue. I really could. It's more of a matter of my 250 people here know what Bleeding Blue is about. And about a year ago, going through tough times and trying to extend our culture as a marketing tool to make sure good customers stay, we've made that more public about what Bleeding Blue is. But, you know, the reality is you see the people going out and they're getting the best fleets to drive for, which is a great program. I'm not after them. Or they're getting, you know, the top workplace awards, and they're pushing all these third-party things. And that's what you're referring to. That's what's happening today. I could care less. Really, what I want is the next driver to walk into this office. I want him to understand what the start point of that conversation is. And that's Bleeding Blue to us. You know, so If he's got a family problem, he should be able to talk about it. If he's got an employee that's not treating him right, let's talk about it. Customer's not right in his eyes. I mean, it gives everybody a very easy platform to start any conversation with anybody here.
Yeah, and I totally agree with that because, and it kind of feeds into my next question, which is about hiring, right? I would expect that the quality and the type of driver that you're trying to attract is one that fits directly into that bleeding blue mindset, that attitude of what really matters and being of, you know, strong mind and working together and having, you know, integrity and those sorts of things. How important is hiring the right types of drivers who fit that culture versus, you know, hiring to fill a seat? Is that, that's clearly an area that you're focused on.
It is. We still seem that we hover in the high 40% turnover rate. So still higher than I'd like. But hey, an over-the-road truck driver is a hard job. We both know that. Here's what happens. If I see a guy come across my screen, because I still see every termination across my desk, whether I've taken it personally or not, and that person's only been on my payroll for days, not years, I'm asking the question, why'd he gone? Did we mishire? What did we miss? How did we treat him wrong? Half the time, I'm picking up the phone and calling the driver. I'm like, what did we do? So my staff is so much aware that they get reviewed on absolutely every single termination that I'll occasionally get the application that goes, what do you think? You know, does this guy fit? And honestly, I tell my my team, if you've got to ask me what you think I should tell you, I just told you don't hire him. I mean, you know, and there's a couple trucks sitting out in the yard right now that I'd love to have filled, but frankly, I just assume them sit there then rather than them pull the trigger on somebody that I don't want on the truck too. So yeah, we're very high on that. I have to remind myself all the time, high 40% turnover is still about less than half of my peers. So the reality is I think I got a higher standard, not only just barely higher, but higher. So
nothing wrong with having a higher standard and being able to and to meet it, which, by the way, yeah, that is incredible for an over-the-road operation. But I think it speaks to, again, the type of driver that you're trying to hire, the culture that you've created, and that, you know, that bleeding blue mentality. So I know the last, you know, we've talked about this, the last few years specifically have been really, you know, pendulum swinging far one way and then the other. And how's that been? You know, I know, obviously, besides the Bleeding Blue initiative, what else, you know, have you done? How have you operated in the, you know, past several years?
Well, you know, I'm only in this for 28 years, but in the last 4 years, I think you can get the highs and the lows out of the way in a very short chapter of a book. There's no question about that. And, you know, my dad always taught me that you never can get too high or too low in anything that you do. Well, I would challenge him to come back for four short years and live this time, because it's incredibly difficult to stay grounded and humble and modest and energetic and everything during these times. And obviously the parts that always challenge me is when the waves move us away from a center that we want to be, you know. So when COVID hits, the wave moves towards a driver, towards, dear God, just get it to market. I don't care how we get that. And that's very much Bleeding Blue, right? We're all about the driver. We always were. And there's a video out there about me going, heck, everybody's on the praise wagon that I'm always on. I mean, I've, you know, my hero's always been a truck driver, naming my dad. And then obviously the move away from it, you know, so now we're seeing longer delays of detention times and a longer unwait times. And, you know, the shipper of choice is no longer driven for by as many of my customers as it was just short period of time ago for whatever reasons, or more so, you know, the people who have validated or invalidated the mutual trust that many of those relationships are on for one reason or the other during that. So it's been one heck of a ride up and down. I fear that there's a lot of my peers that are reaching all-time lows, and dear God, there's only so many life jackets I can throw out there to a few of my buddies to help them. But it's not a lot of fun. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, that's the conversation that I'm having quite a bit the last really almost 2 years, but certainly the last 12 months easily. There's this want of we're turning things or things are improving. And I think there are maybe green shoots here and there that are, you know, popping up, but it's sparingly. And also I think, you know, by and large, even if that weren't the case, we would be still wanting to will it to happen because it's still the early part of the year. Come on, let's do something.
You know, it's not uncommon during a low churn that the peers of the industry get together and talk about a brighter day. The promising part that I have for a brighter day is the fact that now my customers are talking about it. You know, they're very aware of the market and what's been created and exactly what that is. And some of those large failures have made them realize, well, what would be if, right? You know, so you go to these trade shows and now a common question is, Kyle, are you going to make any money on my account this year? And you go, wow. I mean, let's talk about that. So, if there's green sprouts, it's the fact that the reality of where we are in the market is very clear, I think, to all the players.
Well, I'm curious, you know, talking about some of the challenges that you referenced, you know, delayed, you know, waiting times, et cetera. I'm sure truck parking is a thing that whether you're seeing that or your drivers are probably facing that challenge. What are some of the things that are keeping you up at night? Is there anything regulatory, anything environmental that you can talk about?
You didn't suggest it, but nuclear verdict in today's world, especially an unjust one, are on a lot of our minds, right? It's driving up insurance premiums. It's driving up business costs. It's driving up, in some ways, changing the way we do business, sometimes for good. Let's be honest. There's no doubt that it makes us make sure that we do the right thing all the time, which many of us do anyhow. Outside of that, you know, the driver force still remains aged, regardless of, what COVID did change, brought some new blood to the industry. There's just no doubt that, that's there. So our industry still got to figure that out. Myself included, I'll be the first to, not exclude me from that conversation. Outside of that, I mean, hey, if you can solve people and you can solve lawsuits, man, well, it's still a fantastic industry, one that makes me excited every day I drive to work.
Well, if we did, though, then it would grow too large. Too many people would say, this is heaven on earth.
If COVID taught us anything, it's the fact that if it gets too easy, we'll screw it up that way, too. So I don't know that... You know, I'm a devout Christian, so I don't know about heaven on earth. You know, that's a tough label, but you hit the nail on the head.
It was aggressive. Yes, you're right. Before we go, we've got one last question. And this is the deeper dive question, which is a segment where we take a question from one of our listeners. Today's deeper dive question is brought to you by National Transportation Institute. It's baseball season, and I'm a Dodger fan, and so I grew up in Los Angeles for most of my life, and most of the first 30 years of my life, and it used to be Vin Scully, and it would always be brought to you by Farmer John. So it's National Transportation Institute in this deeper dive question, and the deeper dive question is: do you have any low cost recommendations for improving driver retention? Anything that you might speak to, Kyle, about retention?
Well, assuming that whoever asked the question can merit themselves that they got to give a shit first. I mean, frankly, it don't matter how much you spend. If you don't care, they know. I'm a guy that didn't know how important culture was just simply because I grew up in it, right? You know, so it took me decades to figure out how important it is. after that, you know, even in today's inflation world, burgers and brats are cheap. Drivers love to eat. Put yourself behind the grill and cook. If that isn't practical for your application, videos are incredibly cheap to make. Put yourself on a private YouTube channel and distribute it. And if you're bold enough at the end of it, ask for their feedback and give your direct cell phone number. If your fleet don't have your cell phone number, give it to them. Second, we'll answer it when they call. I mean, at the end of the day, if you work here, family values are the core of it. So show them you care. And it's easy to do that. I mean, when I fly to Florida to our operation, everybody thinks I'm crazy. I sit either in the driver's lounge or the conference room with my laptop. That's where I work. I don't go hide in no executive suite. Well, heck, we don't have an executive suite, but that's a completely different podcast. I go put myself in the middle of the people. I'll put a cold suit on when I'm on our dock. There's nothing better than being part of what they do. My brothers drive on a fairly regular basis. So earn their trust, show them you care, and not all that costs much money at all.
And engage, as you said, engage with them, whether that's, you know, communicating and through a channel and via video or cooking for them, but be with them and engage with them. And it goes a long way. I don't know that it gets much less expensive than that, but so valuable.
I couldn't agree more. Hey, you know, at the end of the day, a video that shows that you care, really, they don't leave you, or they don't leave what you do. They leave you. You know, so if a driver's walking out the door, if they tell you that they're leaving for a family reason, I always accept that. If they're not, that means I failed. So that's the basis of what I do. Show them you care.
Well, Kyle, thank you so much for joining me. I hope to see you in person at some upcoming industry events.
I look forward to it.
Thanks again for joining me for another episode of Taking the High Road. Once again, special thanks to the sponsors of this show. We really appreciate you. If you're interested in being a sponsor or joining me for an interview, please email Jeremy at takingthehighroad.com. Until next time, thank you for taking the high road.